Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? It's that time again on a Wednesday evening at the 8 o'clock hour. If you're at the Blog Talk Radio Network, this is the K. Thompson Live Show. I'm Citizen Bane. My mom, K. Thompson, is on assignment in heaven. Gave you a little intro, recorded clip of her introing me just for the fun of it. Excuse me, chewing in your ear. That's a peanut and M&M. And it's Wednesday, the 28th of August. And interesting things, very interesting things in the realm of politics and just stuff going on in the news. Always interesting with the guy that's living in the White House now, but it gets progressively, it has gotten progressively more interesting in terms of just the wild and crazy stuff, you know, this week being at the G7. And wanting it to be the G6 because it ain't the G8, and making up stuff about Obama getting Putin kicked out when, you know, just the usual kind of lies and fabrications and whatever comes to mind, and saying his wife knows Kim Jong Un, has gotten to know Kim Jong Un, and, you know, just all kind of nutty stuff. You know, it is possible while Trump was speaking to Kim Jong Un on the phone, he might have put Melania on to say hello. Who knows? You know, sometimes people do that. But we got a whole bunch of stuff to discuss all over the spectrum. But let me bring a brother, one of our whole co-hosts, Brother Byron Saunders. Brother Byron, how you doing this evening?
Good evening. Good evening, Eric. How are you, my brother? I'm back here in the swamp. I'm in the swamp, as also known as the cesspool, Washington, D.C. And you know something? The smell has been pretty good since 45 was not in town. So we're happy he's gone. Now that he's back, the smell came back with him. However, today we need to acknowledge two pieces of history that are very critical to the African-American experience historically. It was on this date in 1955 that Emmett Till was murdered. Till was a 14-year-old African-American boy who was beaten and shot to death by two white men. Now, these men then threw the Till's mutilated body into the Tallahatchie River near Money, Mississippi. Now, young Till was killed for talking to and perhaps whistling. That's right, you heard it, whistling at a white woman at a Mississippi grocery store. Now, later that year, Roy Bryant, that was the whose wife Carolyn was the white woman at the store, and his half-brother J.W. Milam were tried for Till's murder and acquitted by a jury of 12 white men. Now, interesting to note about this particular incident, Eric, is that in 1955, his mother decided and was determined to show the body when it was returned home to Chicago. You may remember it. I know I remember it. And that photo of the body and the mutilated body visible at the funeral. Mm-hmm. She insisted on having the casket open. Jet magazine took the picture. It was in that magazine and became the celebrated icon of how bad and brutal and cruel racism, white racism, in this country really is. So we remember today Emmett Till, a 14-year-old African-American young man whose life was snuffed out by white racism and evil. And so that particular moment, of course, is in our history books, but it's also the same day that was in 1963, Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his I Have a Dream speech on the mall of the Washington, D.C., down in right there in front of the Lincoln Memorial set up, and it was quite a day 500,000 people came to Washington, D.C. to protest in peaceful demonstration to promote civil rights and economic equality for African Americans. So we have two amazing historical moments we must give recognition to because they helped to change the dynamics of our existence here in the United States of America. So
you're saying that took place today on August 28th, both of those monumental occasions.
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, I was not aware that on August 28th that I Have a Dream speech that day,
yeah,
the March on Washington Day, or Emmett Till. Nor what's
yeah
even more interesting to me is I didn't even hear any blurbs on any news programs to
exactly
say that, you know, this is the anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech, or to say this is
right.
I heard them talking about the guy who greets his little brother coming home from school and puts on goofy costumes.
Yeah.
At the nightly news and a little human interest, but no mention at all on the news programs that I saw of that, any of that history that's important to us. And I'm sure someone mentioned it on one of the programs, one of the more enlightened people, but it just goes to show you that what America values, it doesn't value us in our history, clearly.
Right.
Because
right,
one of the most, talking about the I Have a Dream speech, one of the most monumental days in history in this country, period. And not
that's
even
right
a slight blurb by these local news programmers. It's interesting. The just the myth of things that America has built herself up on, this kind of pedestal, and to find out who truly America is, and these individuals who had a vision of their own country and a vision
right
of a country that paid off and was beneficial to them, clearly, because that's what's been passed on through these people that they hold on to throughout history, you know. They were talking about, I put on a description of the show tonight about the G7. Trump was at the G7, or they called the G6+1, because he's so nutty. This man is so, who believes in white supremacy, is so nutty and so stupid that they just got to have to find ways to work around him. And, you know, the notion that they were all talking about, does democracy, is that a good form of government, good form of a model for society to live under, and that they were saying that how Trump was the only one who questioned whether democracy was a good system. And here's the guy who's supposed to be president of supposedly the leading democracy in the world, questioning it. So it shows you that these men like him, and many like him, who really run the world, that it's only beneficial to keep things going as it's beneficial to them. You know,
you've got right
rate cuts,
and
the fares,
you know,
the interest of the stock market and all that. It's only
exactly
beneficial to the people who can afford that. So you're going to say?
Well, I was going to say that one significant thing that did happen at the conference, the G7+1 conference, or 6+1, I like the way you call it that, was that truth matters. And leave it up to an African-American sister journalist, Yamiche Alcindor, to put the president on notice and send him backpedaling because she challenged him on the facts and truth of his answer to her question. Now, you know, this is the third year of this idiot that we have in the office, and I sure wish other journalists would show the type of journalistic backbone that this sister displayed, because she called him out in his press conference that he
yeah
had with Macron and said, "You're lying. You're lying
yeah
to
you,
us.
You know that's not. You know that's not true. Why do you keep
that's
this
right
on saying that when he tried to blame
that's
Obama?"
Right.
And that's what
exactly
they all need to do. And clearly the fact that you have some of these people talking about primarying him, you know, like
yes
Joe Walsh and Scaramucci and
yes
all that, I mean,
yes,
that's a good thing. You know, I mean, they're just as bad, but at least there's a minimum of sanity that appears to be coming out of their wasteland, you know. But
right,
these are the same people who brought us, who put us in this position, right? Let's not forget. you know, that they're the same ones, the Republicans are the same ones who put us in this position for this
individual to be elected.
And all he's doing is revealing just how barbaric, just how self-serving all of their whole program, their modus operandi is, you know. The thing that I think that was interesting, what got people's attention from Trump, was that he was willing to say certain things that everybody knew about the government or about us, you know, but that nobody said. Like when he says, you know, I give them all money. You know, they all come to me for money, because that's true about certain politicians. That politics, you know, they have to raise money. So sometimes they got to deal with people that they don't want to. So he that was something that the average American was aware of, you know, that, yeah, they all need money. So when Trump says that, it seems like he's telling the truth, you know. That's what puts him above or separates him from everybody else. It looks like, oh, he's willing to tell it like it is. Because he says, I bought him, I gave him money, I know him, I know this and all that. So when he says all of these things to lead these people down these paths, but in the same way, they can't see that he's playing the same game on them of telling them what they want to hear. And we've said it before, hundreds of times, is that their hatred blinds them to go along with someone who's doing things that it's detrimental to them as well as everybody else if they fall in that kind of economic, socioeconomic demographic that appears to be getting screwed up by him. You know, when you talk about tax cuts,
yes,
middle class voters didn't get the tax cut that he told them that they were going to get. You know, the coal miners out there protesting because their coal jobs ain't coming back like he told them they were going to, but they still blindly support this guy, you know. And it's just like this show that you have, this roller coaster that people have, that seems that everybody, the entire world, has learned to ride with this idiot.
That's for sure. Well, I think, as Malcolm said, when it's times like right now, when chickens come home to roost, because he's getting hit from all angles, all sides. I mean, be rest assured, it's not because of anything that he's done positive. It's because the negative, the lies. You keep lying, 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 and now, you know, you're on the world stage lying and being caught lying. I mean, it's not, how much more is the American public going to stand for? And as I said, talking heads and the journalists who have now got to call him out when he starts talking crazy, because the 25th Amendment should have been put into play months ago. He is dangerous. He's a dangerous, lying psychopath, okay? I mean, you start analyzing all of the mannerisms he's showing us, and he's sitting there in our faces, absolutely, mentally, you know, having mental problems that for most people would be taken off the streets and put into an asylum somewhere. So, I mean, it's just time that we challenge him, challenge Mitch McConnell, challenge the GOP in its entirety. It's being proven that they all got Russian money. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the problem really is. It's not just flushing the swamp out. We've got to put the cesspool and drain it, because it is filled and overflowing with the stench of an enterprise that is criminal. Absolutely criminal. And it's time to put them all in jail where they belong.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a collusion of a conspiracy, really. Certainly that all these people are willing to go along with this and manipulate facts and lies. I mean, you know, when the guy gets on and says his wife has come to know Kim Jong-un, and everybody, you know, it's like you're just making stuff up. And people are supposed to go along with it. No, and you know good and damn well that everybody knows if your wife would have been there meeting this guy, it would have been the news. So then the White House is going to come out and say, well, she's come to know him through you and all this other idiotic stuff. It's just like, you know, they just, the guy makes stuff up as if he's a king. And everybody's supposed to sit there and act like they're going along with it. And just the stupidity of him has really permeated. You know, especially when we're talking about, you know, the climate and the things in the Amazon, You know, I'm thinking about the president of Brazil, who's rejecting the $20 million that the G7 has offered, the measly $20 million for the rainforest, which is another subject. But, you know, this guy is, well, maybe I won't take it if the French president apologizes. Like, come on, man. You know, everybody's, you know, we don't got time for stupidity, but this is another example of an idiot head of state. You know, I mean, scientists have said that the Amazon is the lungs, the rainforest is the lungs of the earth, and that it affects the climate greatly if you're going to burn in it. So what's the issue? What's the issue? Y'all get, I mean, they get their feelings all up. You know, we got a speeding train coming at us, and these guys want to argue about, you know, simple stuff. So it's just, you know, the stupidity, Trump's stupidity is spreading around the world. Let's bring in our other co-host, Brother Wayne Gilman here, the new legendary newsman. Brother Wayne, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing just fine, man. I'm sorry that I'm getting to you guys late, and I just suddenly discovered that I have a landline problem, so I'm hoping my cell holds up. But I hope you hear me clearly.
Can you hear you loud and clear?
Okay, that's good.
Hello, Wayne.
Yeah. So I'm glad to be back. You know, I'm just going through some changes in my human plumbing, and hopefully once that's all resolved, I'll be fine. You know.
All right.
You're absolutely right, Eric and Byron. It's just crazy that what this guy's putting us through. And if I could blow my horn for a moment, I had a surprise for tonight, but unfortunately, as busy as my family schedule is, yesterday, if no one saw it in the news or recognized it, but I just found out around 7 o'clock last night that the New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio had proclaimed New York is Neil Long Day. And there was this
big event by
the Gracie Mansion. Yeah, and I was I hate to blow my horn, man, but I was so proud of this little girl. I mean, she's not a little girl anymore. She reminded me of that. I used to change her diapers and babysit her and blah, 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 blah. But, oh, my God, you know, it's just amazing. You know, I'm just to blow my horn, not to say I'm being bigoted by this, but please don't misunderstand, but when I see her telling white folks what to do and they jump, get my cell phone, bring my cell, I just said, excuse me, you know, but just one of those things. And, you know, I had a good time, and I'm glad I was, at the last minute I was going to cancel, and then they persuaded me to come, but I had no idea what I was going to until I got there. And I wanted to get her to come on the air tonight. But she should be on her way to China now, if not in China, because her husband plays for the Philadelphia 76ers. He's a coach there. He used to be with the Texas team, the Spurs. And,
the Spurs? Okay.
Yeah. He used to be assistant coach under Popovich, and I think they gave his position now to Tim Duncan, who had been with them for a long time. You know, so it was just one of those things. But I that was my surprise. But she promised, once she gets back, she's gonna, gonna try to coordinate something so we could.
Well, that would be nice.
You guys are the actors. I don't know nothing about Hollywood. You know?
Well, wait. I have a bone to pick with you because I've been a Nia Long fan for a long, long time. I think she's stunningly beautiful. Yeah, she is married to, you know. Yeah, and you've just been holding out on this, bro. Come on.
Well, you know, I mean, it's funny. I thought of your mother last night because, you know, I remember, and I said it during the service. But I remember back in the salad days when, you know, I was trying to scuffle and make a living at the old location, Second Avenue, and you know, she'd come up in the morning from time to time and bring me coffee and all that stuff. And you know, I remember your mother was so kind enough you know, she didn't know. I mean, at that point, I didn't know at that point that she would be who she is today. And just to see, you know, people fawning over her, and you know, again, I don't like to do this because that's not my role, but it's like, was my daughter, you know? I can't explain but it was like my daughter getting this key last night.
Well, that's great news, right?
Yeah.
Now, you know
I'm going to have her on.
You know who her sister is? Her sister.
Her half sister is the comedian.
Yeah,
you know,
that's her half sister, right?
Right, right. She has a couple of half sisters. I guess it's common knowledge to people who follow her, but the deal is that Papa was a Rolling Stone. I'm not saying this to denigrate him, you know, but the deal is it was just hurtful. I'll never forget the day of her high school graduation, and she found out. And it wasn't Samora, but she has another half-sister. You know how you go to school with somebody?
They just happen
to have your last name. And, you know, you think they're your friend. And even if they look a little like you, you know, but not to know that that's your blood until your father shows up at graduation. And, you know, he's saying, humada, 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 you know. Please. It is what it is. But,
she has a great career. Nia Long certainly is an accomplished actress and is a name black actress and has been for a while, you know, ever since like Boys in the Hood, and I'm sure other things before that. But, you know, and you mentioned, I remember you mentioned before that was your cousin. So I've known that for a little bit. I never knew until you said that she was actually from New York. I thought for whatever reason, she might have been based in L.A., being that she was in Boys in the Hood, and that seemed to be kind of, you know.
Yeah, but she spent her early years in Brooklyn. I mean, she came as a baby into my parents' home, and she stayed till she was like almost 12, 13 years of age between me and her grandparents. As I said, her childhood was hard, you know, and I know if she were to see, you know, I know when she sees her father now, I mean, she's made peace with him, but I remember the first time I had her on the air with your mother, you know, she had a lot of stuff to say, and I said, listen, you know, we have 50,000 watts of radio here, the station covers three or four states, your father's in the listening area. You know, and I, if I'm not mistaken, I think your mom even said to her, you know, you got to be careful because you never know. People don't need to know this. And then besides, I'm your cousin. I don't want any they didn't even have TMZ then, but, you know, TMZ drama then. But But the thing is, the thing that I, you know, and I really appreciated your mom for doing what she did, but more importantly, you know, I guess the thing that I always look at that whole profession from the periphery, because I know it's very difficult to get into, and it's very, very difficult to stay on top. I mean, you guys are soldiers, and I was just, you know, because you have so much in common, I thought it would have been a great segment, but it will happen. I will make it happen one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, and all that. So, and I told her about, you know, she knows about the show and all that. So,
you told her about de Blasio. But, we could make a turn into de Blasio. He, and he reminds me that he's not one of the ones that got invited to the new debate that's going to be going on in two weeks.
Yeah. Well, he didn't. You know, it's funny. I don't know what's going on with him because I talked to him last night, and Congressmember Yvette Clark, who's like almost family to me now between her and her mom, Una Clark.
Right, Una.
They were both there, and the deal is we were talking about, he corrected me about, what was it he was saying? He didn't like my calling the flyover states, he said that was that was being prejudicial, that, you know, there were people who supported us in that area and those areas. And I'm saying, yeah, I understand that, but it's still an issue, you know, with the dominant factor being these people who are not informed. You know, it's not to say that they don't know what's at stake, because they got to feel it in their pocket. And they got to, you know, understand that we're in a very perilous time right now when it comes to our economy. But it's just unfortunate that these things are going on, and this guy has got to go. And I, you know, no one wanted to turn around and say anything. And I don't want to speak out of school, because I know your cousin sits probably in some of the same committees with Yvette. But the bottom line is that I really think it's time now that that whole impeachment issue should be brought to the fore. And it's, you know, he's like some of the things that you cited at the beginning of the program, Eric, you know, that he's clearly guilty, you know, and it's like we cannot afford to lose what this democracy is all about. In many instances, every time I wake up and I hear something new, I just get the distinct impression that we're living under a dictatorship. You know, it just bothers me that at this stage of the game, this is what's happening. And as far as de Blasio is concerned, I know that his thing is twofold. He figured he'd take a shot at running for the presidency, but I also believe that, you know, he's term limited, and what else would he do at this point, you know, but try to do something that would either put him in a net, because there are no Senate seats to be grabbed now in New York State. Cuomo's got a lock on the governorship. What do you do after mayor, you know?
Yeah, right.
So that's the thing. And it was my first time meeting him. I covered him towards the end of my career in New York over the phone. But this guy could have played for the Knicks, man. This guy is huge.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah, well, one of those things. But
He seemed like he's close to getting ready to drop out. You know, Kristen Gillibrand dropped out.
Oh, yeah, she
today.
Just did.
And he seems like he's probably, you know, I mean, if you're not in that top 10, top 15, which I'm sure you guys are probably aware of, the latest poll that's got all top five candidates on the Democratic side beating Trump by various point spreads.
Yeah, yeah.
but, I mean, what I'd like to see, you know, going on is that they carry the impeachment. I heard a notion or a fact about the impeachment is that if they don't start it now, by the time he gets out of office and stuff, they want to make sure that the statute of limitations doesn't run out on the crimes that he's committed. So that's why that's one of the cases for, you know, starting or going through the impeachment process, so that statute of limitations will not have taken effect. And so for that, I think it's good, and I would like to see, hopefully, that instead of going after each other, that all of the candidates, and you know, you have to draw the distinctions between yourself and another candidate. I understand, but I would hope that they really decide to go after the president and just continue to hammer for the next year and a half the message home that this man is unfit. And now that you have at least there's a small groundswell of Republicans that seem to be pushing that and trying to build up momentum, that we can get this guy out of office, you know, and you know, hopefully there's that everybody in our party kind of, you know, gets in agreement, and nobody gets too self-serving and selfish in terms of what they want, because as we know, a lot of times probably the downfall of politics is that, you know, human beings being human beings, sometimes they decide to go for themselves as opposed to the collective.
The other thing that's very dangerous is that we right now, today, at this very moment, Puerto Rico is getting hit with a Category 1 hurricane. Here we have crickets. This individual, known as 45, says that there's a corruption in Puerto Rico. Excuse me? This is the same person who's playing golf when Hurricane Maria devastated the island and has yet to overcome the devastation of 3,000-plus people being killed, an inadequate response system from and this is an individual that says Puerto Rico's government is corrupt? Well, who's made it corrupt? Last time I checked, Puerto Rico was under the domain of the United States Senate and Congress. Who has charge of their purse strings? The corruption is inside the federal government. Absolutely, he was in bed with the former governor. And the people busted him for playing that toss the paper towel routine he did when he went down there on a photo op opportunity.
Right. Well, it was embarrassing. It was insulting. But I tell you, one thing that really got to me was the fact that he's talking about cutting FEMA funds, just like George W. did back in the day, because he wants to devote that money to the wall. You know?
Right.
And people are dying.
Thank you.
And the notion that he's... Yeah. And the notion that some people, he's talking about pardoning some people that might push the limits of legalities. Is that an idea? I mean, this is it's crazy talk, you know? And then, you know, he wants his wall. This guy in Brazil is allowing people to burn down the rainforest, you know?
Yeah.
And Trump, you know, I mean, it's just this kind of idiot behavior by some of these so-called leaders or these guys that get elected to office in these places, you know. It's ridiculous, you know. I was saying earlier, you know, it's like, you know, these cats, the house is on fire, and they want to argue about, you know, what kind of drapes to put up. You know, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
You know, it makes no sense to have the – go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's just sad that we've come to this level of basically idiot. I mean, I don't even know what more to describe it as. You know, I mean, we are so mediocre in the eyes of the world. And the other thing is, it's just that there is a sea of ignorance out there. And this is what I was trying to tell de Blasio in the event last night, that I am deeply, deeply concerned about those folks who didn't watch the Mueller hearings, who go along with the company plan, whatever satiates their needs. And I'm so glad now. I don't know what Fox is doing because I'm not spending a lot of time. I don't spend a lot of time watching Fox. But apparently, I guess one or two of their repertorial staff is actually reporting the news the way it should be. And he's offended that, you know, about what some of them are saying. You know, I mean, you still have that Laura Ingraham there. You got Sean Hannity and the guy that comes on overnight from time to time. You know, they still talk the same rhetoric, but it's just trying to reach that audience who really needs to see the difficult situation that this country's in right now, and not to allow it to continue. You know, we are on the precipice of a recession. The sneaker companies came out today and said that if they don't stop the tariffs, it's going to impact on sales with them, and also the inability of poor people living in urban centers where a bulk of their money come from not being able to go out and buy sneakers. You know, I know the whole towns down south. I'm certain you both have seen reports where, you know, people have donated their sneakers to young kids who need to play basketball, either for school or just to get back and forth to school, let alone playing athletic sports in school. So, I mean, it's that kind of nonsense when corporate America begins to speak up and speak out about an apparent atrocity, you know, why is it that, you know, they always have a different line, you know, and it's supposed to be fake news, you know, and then they get people up there to spin things, oh, what he said was a joke, you know, that nonsense with breaking the law and being part. I mean, I find that highly offensive. You know, what comfort do we have in our nation's leader that we could go to bed at night and feel that we're not on the precipice of disaster here? You know, it saddens me. It really saddens me. And,
yeah, we need to.
And the other thing I was going to say that I just hope that the Democrats, you know, come together. Because I know it's a weeding out process, but we got to do something.
Yeah, it's also an education process. Obviously, the more stuff happens and the more it just becomes more and more mounting and surmountable, is that some of the people they can't deny the facts anymore, just about how bad this looks, and it can't, you know, it's finally starting to sink in to some people after the last 2.5 years of this guy's shenanigans that he's not fit to be in office. And I guess what 37% or some percentage is looking to vote for somebody else. And so that's why he's panicking and going crazy and tweeting and attacking everybody in his tweets and stuff like that. So, you know, after a minute, you know, even the people who claim to be his most ardent supporters have to kind of wake up. Those who, you know, if you're at least read, the facts have to come across your face, and you have to either choose to read the sentence, which the facts in it, 1 + 1 = 2, or you choose not to read that sentence. Because then, you know, then it's on you whether you choose to be educated or not, whether you choose to face the truth or not, the reality. And clearly some of them just still living in that fantasy world, but also they are just willing to go down with them. You know, there's some that are going to believe them, that are going to go down with that mentality no matter what. But the ones that worry me are the ones that ride them out long enough, you know, that have actually been down to ride with this guy just as long as it gets them to where they want to go. That's certainly
exactly
what Mitch McConnell has been doing with Donald Trump, you know. Him and the likes of him and Lindsey Graham and all these people were never his fans, and as soon as he got in there, they just kind of rode with him. Shows you really their plan is and where their loyalties really lie.
Well, I hope their day comes too. Everybody's got a number, man. Everyone has a number, you know? And when your number comes up, that's it.
What do you guys think about these Republicans running against them? Byron, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm right here. You know, I find it interesting that the slate that's going to run against him is either as bad or some of them are even worse than what's in office. For instance, the latest gentleman from the GOP who wants to run, I can't even think of his name right now. As it turns out, several years ago, he was making the same kind of racist comments that Trump has made already. So, I mean, really? You want somebody else to run against him? Well, at this moment, I don't care who's going to be in the GOP. I'm not interested. They have to disavow Trump. Secondly, they're going to have to swear an oath to disavow racism and white supremacy, because beyond that, I have nothing for them to listen to. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They can tell me they're going to free us all and send us back to Africa. I'm not paying attention to not a single mumbling word a GOP person tells us. So,
I happen to agree. not to cut you off, Byron, but guy's name, I think, is Joe Walsh. He's a Midwest.
Walsh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And bigoted. And actually had the nerve to be on MSNBC saying that he is so all of a sudden sorry about having part of the responsibility for giving rise to Donald Trump's candidacy and electability back in the day. You know, but the damage is done, and now you want to change it. How?
Right.
You know, what's that about?
Yeah,
I like anything that makes them feed on each other. You know, as long as they have a circular firing squad, I want to stand there and watch them shoot each other.
Thank you.
You know, that's the aspect of it that I like about it. You know, but no, I don't
guess we should have a moment of silence. I guess we should have a moment of silence for the David Koch who recently passed away.
Oh,
thank you. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all the silence we need. That was it. Okay.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I heard Bill Maher. Bill Maher went off on him.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, I heard comedian Bill Maher, even in death, you know, went off on David Koch. And, you know, I tell you, it doesn't matter how much money you have. $42.5 million died of prostate cancer at 79, you know? So, I don't know. I think it's sometimes the life you lead. I really do. I just think it's, you know, what you sow out here is what comes back at you. And, you know, I'm now going through that journey myself, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, you kind of wonder what led to him having with, you know, you figure he was getting the best of care. I mean, he was. Same facilities going to IMS now and Justice Ginsburg. But the bottom line is that it's just very telling. What was your contribution to our life here? What is it that you and your brother did that, you know, you felt that you were so invincible with all the money that you had on the planet that you could just turn the world? I think it's just so sophomoric the way they look at life and their level of conservatism. You know, I mean, blacks as a whole, we're not a monolith. There are a lot of conservatives in our community. But at least I'd like to think that there's some balance and some appreciation for humanity. You know, but if you own a company where they're constantly conducting raids on people who, whether they're legal or not legal here, but you'll go along with the program and don't care about its impact, not just on your workforce because you have it like that, I just think that's just sinful. And the support, well, they didn't really do a lot of support for Trump, but they're still guilty of the same games, you know, of what he's doing. And it just saddens me to know what's going on there, period.
Individuals like that don't have any borders, you know. I mean, they said that they were for libertarian. And, you know, who cares about him? Good riddance, other than his family. I don't care if this guy dies. I mean, you know, he was never, you know, like we said, I mean, he was only for himself and various other...
And what the family
various,
wanted.
Various other, I mean, you know, they were against for deregulation, right? They didn't want, they wanted less government involvement. You know, so that all means that when you get rich people like that, they don't want the government telling them what to do. You know, these are the same type of individuals who want to have private islands and, you know, take people over to their island and do whatever they want to do and have their various houses and places. And, you know, so and the whole thing about, you know, having his company, one of their companies where the ICE raids took away a lot of their employees, those guys, they could care less. That's collateral damage to them, man.
Exactly.
They could care less whether those people are being snatched up and separated from their kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those guys, their control over the world and the majority of products that are used by people every day on a daily basis, that's all they're concerned about, you know. and their conservative issues, which is the problem for, you know, you say black people, at least, you know, we're not a monolithic group and we're conservative and we're this and that. But the thing about it for us is that, you know, we were the oppressed ones. We were the enslaved ones. So there's always going to be that awareness to a certain degree of having come from an oppressed people and having to have dealt with that type of stuff. So I don't know whether the other individuals, if you never experienced that, whether it causes you to have that awareness, you know, if it's something that you never had to think about.
Well, and the thing is, the one thing that you know, I'm glad you point that out. I mean, we are that diverse, but the thing is, we cannot hide. And in spite of whatever crosses have been, you know, put against us, some of us have managed to not only survive but strive. And I think that's commendable. But at the end of the day, it does not change the circumstances that, you know, we stand in front of a crowd, regardless of how much money you may have in your pocket or what you're doing or who you live. There's always a tax that we have to incur, you know, just because of our melanin and our skin. And that's the issue.
Right. And depending on who you're standing in front of, you know, that's how it will affect you, you know. We got a couple more minutes, about another 15 minutes. You know, it's next week, one more preseason football season is starting up. I'm wondering if you guys are going to be watching, if you are football fans, if you're going to be watching, or, you know, what do you feel about that in terms of, in light of the NFL and their situation with African Americans?
It's going to be interesting.
Good point.
Especially very interesting in Miami with the Dolphins, because his owner is openly supporting the Trump re-election campaign. He also is the owner of the Equifax gym systems, for which a lot of LGBTQ members, Equinox. And it's like, I think that we're entering a new phase in which athletes are beginning to understand that their dominance on the field can be just as powerful off the field, and especially when it comes to human rights. We were back in that moment. Back, you remember when Muhammad Ali was surrounded by Jim Brown, Lou Alcindor, then who became the best basketball player ever, and all the other athletes who were there to support. The Muhammad Ali's not going into the service. It cost him 2 years of his abilities. But the athletes got together, and I think you're starting to see what started last year with Kaepernick, and now you got censors at the World Games kneeling, white athletes. You got hammer throwers, the sister who's our national champion, declaring, you know, that the inequalities going on. You've got the women's soccer team and the goalie standing up and saying, or the most of them saying, I don't want to be here with Trump. You know, it's interesting that we're engaging now athletes who are not just paid to be on the field, but they're making their voices known. And they have money to be heard and listened to. And I think we're going to see some more of them standing up and saying enough is enough. Watch Miami, though. Watch the Dolphins and see how this plays out.
Okay, Wayne.
Go on. No, I was just going to say I happen to agree, because the that Miami situation – has so many legs to it in terms of, you know, illegalities and under the ownership, and he's tied to the Epstein case, he's tied to Trump with all the scandalous activities that occurred prior to his presidency and all that. But it is going to be very telling. It will be a defining moment, and the thing is that I also feel to a great extent that. Blacks, who largely dominate that particular sport, like in any other sport, now they make enough money that they can take a stand and tell the ownership where to go and what to do. And I think that you know, I find it so despicable when they had that fundraiser out in the Hamptons a few weeks back where they raised
right.
a ton of money. So obviously there's still a contingent of wealthy people out there that want to see this mess continue in spite of what nonsense that prevails with it worldwide, that they would donate all sorts of large sums of money just to be in that game. And the thing is that if you're an employee of one of these teams and you know that you can make a difference by taking a certain particular political stance, it makes it, you know, I think it's commendable, you know. I think Kaepernick was on the case from the very beginning. He's taken a lot of whiplash from it. And the one or two people who look like us, but like as Jay-Z said the other day in the meeting with the ownership there, that, you know, we all know what elephant's in the room now. So
yes.
let's see what we could do about it. I know there's a lot of back and forth about his presence now, but something's got to give, you know?
Yeah, I guess what the real question is, the issue is what concrete things are being done. I mean, what is, you know, Kaepernick's his reason was to bring attention to the unnecessary killings of black people by police, at the hands of police. And so now, what's the outcome? You know, what concrete things have been gained from that? I mean, he was choosing not to kneel, chose to kneel during the national anthem. So what, you know, and that brought attention to it. And they fucked with him because of that. Excuse my language, mm-hmm. the league and the owners mess with him because of that. So now with Jay-Z's involvement, I've heard, you know, very little about that. I haven't really gotten to the researched or looked up the details. But what I'm wondering what concrete things are going to be done. Is the NFL given creating programs for entrepreneurship in urban communities? I mean, what are they doing? You know, what concrete things are they doing to address the concerns of the majority of their employment, of their workforce? You know, so
Eric, they also have another big issue which they're going to have to deal with, and that's the owner of the Patriots being caught in a compromised position. Okay, now when you start firing your players for beating up your wife on the elevator, okay, like in Rice did at the Baltimore Ravens, and other individuals who have been accused and convicted, or even spanking your son, like in Adrian Peterson did when he was with the Vikings. Now, you know, you got an individual who gets caught in a massage parlor who owns the New England Patriots, and you don't do anything. You don't even let the public see the video where he got busted. That's got to be. That's got to come.
Yeah, but
far,
why?
Far,
I mean, what is
forward.
That? I mean,
it says
the
a lot about. That's right.
Oh yeah.
It says
a
lot about the moral compass and the attitude out of the front office. You can convict and ruin and end a young man's career instantly, and then let a owner who you know he's trafficking in sex.
Sure.
Trafficking.
But at the end of the day,
they're
gonna still do their thing and lay low because there's no laws that he hasn't been found guilty of the law that they were trying to get him on. So what? He just stays out. They just don't put Robert Kraft out there as like the example of find ownership in the NFL. They let Jerry come out there or don't talk about any owners. You know what I mean? So there's no real consequences like a. Good.
No, I was going to say that is the double standard right there. That just goes to show what money can buy. That they could, the same way this guy who committed suicide in a federal prison the other day was able to get away with what was tantamount to murder for so many years until he got caught. You know, it's the same thing with the NFL ownership versus the players. You know, Ray Rice, a New Rochelle talent. You know, basically paid a penalty and has now turned his life around since that incident with his then girlfriend, now wife. And they seem to be doing things that are working in a very progressive way. But his career is tainted. I knew the gentleman that used to coach Ray when he was back in high school, lived across the street from me and the Rochelle there. He's dead now, this guy Bill Smith. And, I mean, really, really talented person and someone, you know, when you start grooming someone and you see how they blossom over years and then you get to the point of the pinnacle of success, and then all of a sudden one bad move can just turn your life around, you know? How many times could someone from an urban center and go through that process time and again? We've all seen it. Even in basketball, the brother used to play for the Nets when the Nets were in Jersey. I can't think
right.
of the guy's name now, but you know, I mean, it's like we John Williams. We don't have some of the options that an ownership with all sorts of money that, you know, this guy Kraft could go and do and get away with what he's doing. You know, he's no paragon of virtue, but you have a responsibility, just like the President of the United States has a responsibility to set a moral tone, you know? And that's the issue. You know,
what's
this is where the dividing line occurs.
I was saying to set a moral tone, that's his responsibility. I don't know about that. I mean, you know, they could make an issue of it. I think it's that they try to promote themselves as because of their monetary success, right? They've become wealthy and own teams. That's when these individuals begin to attempt to promote themselves and their PR as being model citizens. And because they've achieved, made a lot of money, all of a sudden we're to assume that they're decent, honorable people when, you know, obviously the wealth shows that we look at somebody. Some of these individuals that means very little, you know, in terms of who they are as a person. I think the real travesty there is that Ray's career pretty much came to an end as a result of that. When even
That's
at
right.
that time, his wife was saying, you know, no, we made up because she realized they didn't want to lose that. You know, they had a lifestyle that they'd become accustomed
right.
to. You know, and so does it equate to that Kraft gets slapped on the wrist for his behavior? He's not slapping anybody up, but he's engaging in what society has deemed immoral behavior, like Ray has, and then Ray's career comes to an end, right? I mean, he still had years left to play, but, you know, nobody wanted to sign him after that, and that's kind of something that needs to be looked at in terms of that whole zero policy. Like, do you take the man's livelihood just because he plays, because his livelihood and his profession is one that's high profile, right? Because who's to
right,
say the motherfucker,
right.
excuse my language, who's to say the dude working on the assembly line who does the same thing to Ray is not going to get the same type of publicity, and his job is not going to get taken from him, right?
Right.
He's going to get
exactly.
whatever kind of society. Well, no, it ain't no anger. I'm just talking the facts. I'm not coming from any kind of vested interest in it. I'm just drawing a line or making an observation about the difference in treatment of it. That's all I'm saying. You know.
Yeah.
So,
Eric and Wayne, I want to share this with you because this is an important piece of history. Back August 23rd, 1791, do you know what that important date is? It's because the date when the Haitian Revolution, these African slaves refused to be slaves, defeated the most powerful navy in the world, the Napoleon and the French Navy. And it's because of that defeat is that the Western Hemisphere and its relationship to race and slavery and Africans changed almost immediately, because it's from that point on, this country and all of the other major countries conspired to put a blockade on Haiti that put them
That's
into
right.
spiraling poverty for the rest of their lives.
And not forgiving them
Isn't
any money.
Something?
There it is. That's the last point. We got another 30 seconds, so I want to say thank you, Brother Byron. Thanks for give the people your send-off, my brother.
Peace and love always. Remember, you have the power to make change a reality. use it.
Absolutely.
Vote.
There it is. We'll talk to you again, Byron Saunders.
Amen.
Byron.
Right.
Wayne Gilman. Brother Wayne Gilman.
I just want to echo Byron's sentiments as well and just keep hope alive, brother. That's all we have.
There it is. All right. Talk to you later, Wayne. Take care. This has been the K. Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Citizen Payne, also known as the son of K. Thompson. My mom is on assignment in heaven. I want to say thanks for listening. You can listen to us anytime because our show is archived, so you can listen to us anytime you want or every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. All right, got to go. Talk to you later, everybody. Have a good one. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you.